Everything I need. Thank you very much, Betsy. Okay. 3-minute breaks are dangerous. We knew that, but we'll try to resume here in a moment. Council will please come back to order, and Carla, would you please read both items?
Item 893, amend the Visitor Facility Intergovernmental Agreement with Multnomah County and Metro and the Intergovernmental Amended Agreement regarding consolidation of regional convention, trade, spectator, and performing arts facilities with Metro. And item 894, authorize the mayor to sign Oregon Convention Center Hotel Project Memorandum of Understanding with Metro and Multnomah County.
Okay, Mr. Graham and Ms. Ames are here with a presentation, and then we have a number of invited speakers. So please take it away, CAO Jack Graham. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. Jack Graham, Chief Administrative Officer for the City of Portland. With me today is Betsy Ames, my Senior Policy Analyst, who has served as my designated lead for the Office of Management and Finance team that has been engaged in these negotiations. The Visitors Facilities Intergovernmental Agreement was adopted by Metro, Multnomah County, and the City of Portland in 2001. Since that time, the agreement and the Visitors Facility Trust account has supported successful efforts to bring visitors and conventions to the region and has provided critical financial support for the operations of and improvements to regional visitors and spectators facilities. For the last several months, my staff has been working with the county and Metro staff to update the IGA. Betsy will walk through the high-level review of this agreement and the proposed changes that are the subject of the ordinance before you today. One of the main goals of the Visitors Facilities IGA amendments is to support the proposed Convention Center Hotel. The resolution before you today authorizes the Memorandum of Understanding with the Metro and the County, providing directions on the key elements that will be needed to be included in the hotel deal. I'm going to turn the microphone over to Betsy so that she can give Council an overview regarding these two actions that are before you today. Following the presentation, we have invited testimony from Metro, other elected officials, and Travel Portland. And we will also be available for any questions that you may have of us. So, Betsy.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. My name is Betsy Ames with the Office of Management and Finance. I will not read through the 32 pages of the IGA for you today, but I do have a PowerPoint that hopefully will cover the key points over the next few minutes. Before you today, you have an ordinance for the Visitor Facilities IGA Amendment and the Consolidation Agreement, and a resolution for the OCC Hotel Project Memorandum of Understanding. Most of my presentation is going to be talking about the Visitor Facilities IGA. This was originally approved in 2001 by the city, the county, and Metro. That intergovernmental agreement authorized a 2.5% transient lodging tax surcharge and a 2.5% vehicle rental tax surcharge and established the Visitor Facilities Trust account. Those funds are used to for a variety of uses, supporting visitor development and tourism facilities and activities. And part of those allocations are governed by a board that was created as a result, the Visitor Development Fund, Inc. board, on which two city council members serve, as well as elected officials from Metro, the county, and a number of representatives from the hospitality industry. Over the past several months, staff representing the city, county, and Metro have been negotiating these amendments. We're trying to update them to meet existing conditions and new priorities, to provide a way to support the Convention Center Hotel, and building in provisions to ensure the long-term stability of the Visitor Facilities Trust account system and its the allocations that it supports. The Visitor Facilities IGA is just one part of the overall system. that supports our visitor facilities. And the Pac-Man chart was created to help illustrate this complicated system. And it's a familiar sight to many of you and many in this room. As part of these negotiations, we've developed a new and improved Pac-Man chart, a simplified version of which is on the screens. You have an 11 by 17 version that has a lot more detail on it. I'm going to walk through some of the elements to explain the key provisions that are changing and are included in the updated agreement. Starting on the left-hand side, we have the various revenues that are collected from people who stay at our hotels, our motels, and other lodging establishments, as well as those who rent vehicles here in Multnomah County. The revenues, occupants in Portland and in Multnomah County pay 12.5% transient lodging taxes. There are several different slices that have been established at different times and under different taxing authorities. The top two blue slices go to the city. Since 1972, the city's collected 5% for general purposes, and since 1978, we've collected 1% for tourism promotion. The 3% goes to the excise tax fund and funds the OCC operations as well as some other facilities and is governed by a separate IGA between Metro and the county. The two red boxes are the taxes that were authorized by the original Visitor Facilities IGA and fund the Visitor Facilities Trust account. For every hotel, motel, bed and breakfast, etc., other than the proposed Oregon Convention Center hotel project, as well as for motor vehicle rental companies, none of this is changing as a result of your actions today. The one modification to the revenue side for hotels throughout the region is that the visitor facilities transient lodging tax surcharge, which was set to expire along with the IGA when the OCC bonds are repaid in 2030, that is being extended for the life of the hotel project bonds and will extend through 2045. Coming back to the Pac-Man chart, I draw your attention to the right-hand side. The green box at the top is the excise tax fund and its uses. As I mentioned, that's not changing at this time. The yellow box on the left-hand side is a new revenue source for the Visitor Facilities Trust account and reflects the redirection of site-specific transient lodging taxes. When Metro, coordination with the city and county, released the request for proposals for a convention center hotel, one of the public financial tools that was made available to respondents was site-specific transient lodging taxes rebated to the project for a period of years. Hyatt Mortensen, who was the successful respondent, proposed a rebate of the 11.5% of locally generated transient lodging taxes for a period of 30 years. Metro, the city, and the county had several discussions about the best way to achieve this transfer and determined that rather than try to negotiate separate agreements for each of the different slices of transient lodging taxes, the Visitor Facilities IGA could be the one-stop shopping means to do so. A second chart that we created that has been shared with you and which you have before you shows how the revenues flow through with the existing surcharges coming in from the left-hand side into the allocations and the new yellow box in the middle. That yellow box includes references to the changes in the VFIGA, the sections whereby the city and the county are agreeing to transfer the site-specific taxes collected at the proposed OCC hotel based on the city's 5% and the county's excise tax fund for a period of 30 years. The red box, the Visitor Facilities Trust account, those site-specific transient lodging taxes collected at the hotel are flowing through this and are being recognized in the agreement as being hotel-specific. The city's 1% for tourism promotion is a little bit more difficult because city charter requires that we provide that to a nonprofit whose primary purpose is the promotion of convention business and tourism in Portland, Travel Portland is that agency and has a ongoing contract with the City of Portland. In order to provide an equivalent amount to support bonds and support the hotel, we have created a means in the IGA to reduce the enhanced OCC marketing allocation to provide an equivalent amount of money to support the bonds. The other element of the Pac-Man chart that is changing is the allocations that are shown in the red box on the right. The changes to this agreement are providing benefits to Metro, to the county, to the city, to the tourism and hospitality industry, and to the community as a whole. The first set of allocations are for debt service for bonds. These are the highest priority for any revenues flowing into the Visitor Facilities Trust account. The first three are for payment on bonds that the city issued, supporting the priorities of the original IGA. Each has a different maturity date, with OCC bonds being the latest to be scheduled to be repaid in 2030. This OCC hotel project bonds are the fourth allocation, and you'll probably be hearing a lot about those today. Those will be issued by Metro as a result of this IGA being approved by all three bodies and after they have negotiated a development agreement with the hotel developer. And they will be sized to be covered by the site-specific transient lodging taxes collected at the hotel.
Betsy, before you move on, the stadium bonds, what are those?
The stadium bonds were bonds issued in 2001 for PGE Park renovation. Those are paid for by a combination of Spectator Facilities Fund revenues and Visitor Facilities Trust Account revenues.
And so they're still being paid off with the...
with the combination, yes.
Yes. So actually we have a precedent for having invested in a particular use for a facility and using the taxes for that facility.
Yes.
Thank you.
And Betsy, the 5% city chunk that would otherwise go into the general fund, what do we expect based on Metro's projections, the amount of that to be year to year?
It's roughly $1.5 to $2.5 million per year over the period. It grows, of course, based on inflation.
Thank you.
The next seven allocations are for operations, program services, capital improvements, and marketing. I skipped ahead. The first of those is for OCC operating support. This is a modification of the existing OCC operating deficit allocation. The next is for county visitor facilities and operation support. This is a new allocation that will go to a variety of services at the county. The enhanced OCC marketing is the seventh allocation in the system. This is a continuing allocation, and this is where we were able to reduce this in after 3 years of hotel operation in order to free up the equivalent of the city's 1% TLT. So basically, Travel Portland is held harmless. They're the ones that receive this funding, and we're able to allocate those resources for the hotel project. The next allocation is for convention visitor public transit passes. This is a modification to what was formerly Fairless Square and formalizes the ability to provide transit passes for conventioners to go from the convention center to downtown and to travel around the city. The Visitor Development Fund, Inc. allocations, those have been a successful tool used by the board to incentivize conventions to come to Portland. This agreement continues this allocation at the same level and makes it more robust by dedicating an additional $875,000 per year to support these services. That $875,000 is the equivalent of the savings that were generated by the OCC bond refunding that we did a couple years ago. The PCPA operation support number 10 remains at the same level going forward, and the Rose Quarter and City Tourism allocation is a new addition to the system. The last two allocations are to reserves. We're establishing a restricted reserve that is sized to grow and to provide cushion in the event that revenues fall short of expenditure needs and to ensure that all the allocations can be funded even in an economic downturn. The bond redemption reserve will receive any excess revenues once the restricted reserve is at its target minimum level as established by the financial review team and will be used to pay off bonds early.
Betsy, the restricted reserve is the anticipated $8 to $10 million, is that correct?
It depends on the year. It's around $10 million, I think, $8 to $10 million to start, and then it grows depending on what the allocations are growing because it's sized to cover 1.5 times the maximum amount from any given year.
And so one of the things I just want to preview for my colleagues is that we've had some conversations with the parties about just making sure that if in the event of some unforeseen events, sort of along the lines of the stress test modeling, you know, what if all the bad things that could possibly happen, making sure that if those reserves come below a certain amount, there is an adequate trigger for consultation with the various governing bodies. And having been on this council when we saw some reserves in a bureau go from robust to zero without much of a trigger, I've just put a marker down that I want to make sure that my colleagues are satisfied that we get adequate notice and opportunity to weigh in before those dollars are used to cover holes caused by unforeseen events, which put stress on the whole system. So I'll just preview that.
There are additional amendments that aren't really shown on the Pac-Man chart. We included more recitals to provide history and clarity regarding the purpose and intent of the agreement. We did create a financial review team, which is will be composed of representatives from each of the bodies, and it's going to have annual review, but also specific tasks as defined in Attachment A to the agreement, including looking at those reserves, setting the reserve minimum amounts, et cetera.
When you say each of the bodies, is that the county, the city, and metro?
The city, the county, and metro, yes. There's provisions to facilitate refinancing of the stadium bonds. We refinance the OCC bonds and the PCPA bonds. These changes will allow us to refinance the stadium bonds. You will notice in the strike-through and underlined version, we also remove some obsolete provisions and references to things that haven't been around for a number of years. And we analyze all of the changes against various forecast scenarios, including significant shock and recessionary events, and then layered additional shocks on top of those. And we're very confident of the system's ability to be managed over time and support the changes you're voting on today. Another aspect of your ordinance is some minor amendments to what's known as the consolidation agreement. This is a city metro agreement regarding the operations of a variety of facilities, and there are some changes that needed to be made to bring it into conformance with the Visitor Facilities IGA, as well as to address some audit recommendations that have been made by our city auditor. The second action before you today is a resolution regarding the Oregon Convention Center Hotel project. Metro is negotiating the development agreement with Hyatt Mortensen for the Convention Center Hotel. However, they recognize that both the city and the county have an interest in the terms and conditions that will apply to that development agreement as a result of the city and county's support for additional resources via the IGA. The Memorandum of Understanding will provide clear direction to Metro staff about what your expectations are. It includes provisions related to MWESB goals, union contracting, the labor peace agreement for the hotel operations, green building, and other provisions. It includes expectations for the financing plan, the developer fee, and certain limitations on the use of public resources. And both the resolution itself and the MOU calls for the operator to be a rate leader in Portland and work with Metro and Travel Portland to coordinate marketing plans and ensure We're minimizing the impacts on other hotels in the region.
Betsy, can I just ask you a generic question about the MOU?
Mm-hmm.
And that is, what recourse do the jurisdictions have in the event any of these provisions are not met? And I say that against the backdrop of the proposed deal that the mayor is striking with Daimler, where there are some very clear performance goals and consequences if job targets aren't met and other kinds of things. So to the extent we are expecting these to be binding, what is our recourse if one of the parties or successor to that party falls short on what we've negotiated?
I think that might be a question better asked of Metro.
So I'll hold it for them.
And that is it for the formal presentation.
May I just ask an overview question? That was an excellent run-through of all the nitty-gritty of the things that the council is being asked to approve in relation to our participation in the project. Could you just give an overview of what's the total cost of the hotel? How much is public? How much is private? How many construction jobs and how many ongoing jobs?
And that, again, might be something that our Metro representatives could better answer. Ballpark, it's around $200 million, $120 million private, $60 million from the revenue bonds, $10 million from the lottery, $4 million loan from PDC, and $4 million grant from Metro.
Thank you.
Great. Other initial questions for Jack and Betsy? Obviously, stand by. There will be more. And I want to call on, first of all, someone to slide up one more chair. And then we have some elected officials here that I want to call as a group. Metro President, Council President Tom Hughes, Metro Council Member Sam Chase, Hillsborough Mayor Jerry Willey, and Representative Lou Frederick. I believe they're all here, and welcome. Very, very nice to have you all here this afternoon. Mr. Hughes, I believe, is on first.
Okay. Mr. Mayor, members of the Commission, thank you very much for the opportunity to come before you today. For the record, my name is Tom Hughes, and I am the president of Metro, Metro Council, and our address is 600 Northeast Grand Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97232. I'm here on behalf of myself and my colleagues in the Metro Council who passed the IGA that is before you a week or so ago. By a unanimous vote, and Councilor Sam Chase is with me today, and he'll speak to you shortly. As your staff has said, in 2001, the City of Portland, Multnomah County, and Metro, and the group that is now called Travel Portland came together to establish a unique and enduring partnership. Our three governments partnered with the private sector industry representatives and devised a creative agreement to strengthen our region's competitiveness and ensure long-term success in the convention and tourist industry. And this partnership continues to be a resounding success. We've built and expanded the convention center. We've renovated PGE Park, which is now Geldwin Field. We've created an innovative convention marketing system, and we provide incentives for citywide events, large national conventions, sporting events that have infused millions of dollars into the city business. The IGA before you today is, I think, another milestone in that working relationship between us, and I would like to take the opportunity before we get too much into it to just thank your staff and our staff and the staff of the county have been working together for several months to put together this IGA, and I think that the work that they've done has been truly remarkable. This is an innovative and a very progressive way to fund a public project, public-private partnership that will lead to great public benefit and at the same time will also benefit a private partner. Convention and tourism is and will continue to be an important part of our economy. About 10% of our economy is made up of tourism. Currently employs about 30,000 people locally. Generates about $4 billion in travel-related spending for our region each year. I would put that in perspective that I believe I saw a statistic a number of years ago, or a few couple of years ago, that said that the total value of all the Farmgate sales in the state of Oregon in a given year is about $5 billion. So the amount of money that tourism brings just into this region is about $1 billion short of the total value of all the agricultural goods sold in the state of Oregon each year. So that's it's not an insignificant amount of money. We've worked very closely together, and I think that the interesting partnership that has been created between Metro and the City of Portland and Multnomah County and the industry has really been a model for the rest of the nation to look at as to how we finance these. It really was the industry themselves that came to us and said, we'd be willing to tax ourselves to apply a hotel motel tax and a car rental tax and have that money spent to promote regional Portland area tourism activities. And it is administered through a committee Councillor Craddock and I serve on, along with Commissioner Saltzman and Fritz, and Commissioners Smith and McKeel from Multnomah County, as well as representatives from the industry itself. Let me talk to you just a little bit about this proposal and why I think it's important for what we want to do in the region. We've recognized for a long time, in fact, it was recognized before I got to be part of the WE, so it really predates me, that there was a need in order to make the convention center a complete operating, functioning convention center, there really need to be a headquarters hotel. We received that information from virtually every convention planner that comes to town. They don't say we won't bring any conventions to town. They just say you're missing a lot of conventions that won't come because you don't have a headquarters hotel. The question has been how to go about providing that tool for us to build our tourist industry in a way that protects the public finances and at the same time gives us exactly the kind of hotel we need. You will have heard and maybe read in the paper today, some of our critics have said the public sector, if this was a good thing, the public sector, the private sector would have done it. The private sector would, in fact, build hotels, and they have built hotels in the region. It's just they won't build one in the place we want it, of the size we want it, and they particularly will not provide us with a 500 block room block that they basically give over the programming to Travel Portland and let Travel Portland block those rooms 18 months out. That's a valuable key element to booking conventions of that size. The sweet spot for our convention business is the 1,500 to 2,000 person convention. We block 500 rooms in the headquarters hotel. That means that there's another 1,000 to 1,500 rooms that get booked someplace else in town, primarily the downtown area. There's a couple of things about this that I think make it an attractive opportunity. First is the job creation initially. Right out of the chute, we create 2,000 construction jobs. Those are temporary jobs, but they're good jobs, and they're good jobs at a time when we need more good construction jobs in the area. We also create somewhere between 300 and 600. Jobs directly at the hotel itself. And I think it's important to note that partly because of the efforts on your part and our part and Multnomah County's part, Hyatt has agreed to enter into a labor peace agreement with Unite Here, which is the hotel workers union. And this was set to become the first unionized Hyatt in their entire chain until they took the experience from this particular negotiations here and went nationwide with it, and they now have a national labor peace agreement with the union, and they are in the process of negotiating other union contracts in other hotels, and I know there's representatives of that union that can speak to that a lot more knowledgeably than I can. The point is that these are going to be family wage jobs with benefits and dignity and the kind of jobs that we try to create in our community. They are also jobs that have a relatively low threshold. You don't have to have a college degree. You don't have to have a professional license to become a hotel worker in a hotel that's going to pay you a decent wage, give you benefits, and let you put food on the table for your family. And so this is a great opportunity for workers in our community to do that. Is there risk? Of course there's risk. You take a risk when you walked out of your house this morning. But what we've tried to do with the mechanism for funding this hotel is to reduce that risk. And we do that in a number of ways. We have stressed the so-called bucket system, the Pac-Man chart that you saw. The kind of good news contained within the bad news of the last 15 years in this country is that we don't really have to speculate about what worst-case scenarios look like. We've seen worst-case scenarios. Multiple airplanes flying into buildings pretty well tanked the tourist industry in this country, as well as doing a number of other terrible things, and it took it a while to recover. So we've seen what happens to the bucket system in that kind of a crisis. And what we discovered was it was fairly resilient. It was a bit of a dip. It came back with a full funding of the bottom buckets, which are the reserve buckets. We've seen the worst recession since the Great Depression, and we know what that did to the tourist industry. We know what it did to the convention industry, and it was not a very pretty sight. But what we've also seen through the bucket system is that those revenues survived the downturn and came out the other side and are now more robust than they've ever been before. And I think as you heard before, we currently have a $5 million surplus building towards $10 million in a couple of those reserve buckets. And so we've seen the worst, and we know how we can survive through that. And as we've stressed adding the revenue bonds into that system, as we've stressed that through similar occasions, we've discovered that the system functions fine. So we don't think that the risk is that significant. The other thing that we've done, I think, in the negotiations is that we have a private partner that understands the hotel industry. I mean, we're not talking about somebody who made a living in the high-tech business and wants to buy a hotel. We're talking about people who have run hotels for a long, long time. We can find, and we've done a significant amount of research, by the way, we can find no experience of a Hyatt failing. So the question of what happens if Hyatt fails, the kind of part of the answer is it would be the first example of that anywhere in the United States. Hyatt knows how to run hotels, and we feel really comfortable with that. They not only know how to run hotels, they have 135 people out there in their sales force selling their book of business, which is their loyalty customers that want to go places, and now including Portland into their list. So they will not only allow us to build our convention business, they will bring additional business with their own book of business that will fill those hotel rooms, even in the times when there's no convention, without cannibalizing the rest of the rest of the industry. So we feel very comfortable that we've provided for adequate security of the public resources in terms of doing this. So this is a unique opportunity for us to build a hotel paid for by the people who stay in the hotel. And what we're buying with that $78 million is the additional facilities that go into a headquarters hotel, the location of the hotel where we want it, the size of the hotel, the quality of the hotel, and that all important room block. So with that, I'm going to thank you again for the opportunity to address you, and I'd be happy to entertain any questions.
Thanks so much, Tom. Yes, please.
Mr. President, I want to just actually first get a procedural question answered by the mayor. Should we raise some of our technical questions now with you, or is there going to be a staff panel to follow, and or will the operator be testifying? So I don't know.
I think the answer to that is yes. to both. I think there will be a staff panel, or there is a staff panel available, and I know that the operator and the developer are both planning on testifying later.
So I'm going to – there's some sort of technical questions I'll hold for Andy.
That's good. That's very wise.
Because you alluded to some of the critics of this plan, I just wanted to also give you a chance to respond to a couple other criticisms.
Sure.
So you have a chance to put your position on the record. Yesterday, sort of at the 11th hour, we got a letter from the Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association.
Yes.
And in it, Mr. Perry says that the employment numbers are inflated. He calls 600 to 700 employees completely unrealistic and says it'll be likely closer to 300. I don't know what his methodology is, but do you have a response to that?
Nor do I, and I think that the original projections that we had were in the 600 to 900 range. Quite frankly, I think that would be a good question maybe to ask the operator. They probably know what their employment rate in a hotel this size is. Mr. Perry raised the questions without ever communicating with us that he had a concern about it, so we weren't able to respond to that.
The second issue that we've heard from some people about has to do with the potential impact of this hotel on downtown hotels that don't have the same level of subsidy. And the idea, and it's addressed in the MOU, is about the aspiration is for this hotel to be a rate leader, but what happens if, under some scenario of a decline in the industry, they are forced to discount rooms or do things that put downward pressure. What would you say to competitors about the potential impact of this deal on their bottom line?
You know, the deal as it currently stands calls for Hyatt to put about $120 million of their own money into the hotel. If you figure that on a per-key basis, that's about the same as if they just went out and bought a hotel. So they're not getting an advantage for the subsidy. They're getting a 500 room block is one of the things they're getting. So they're getting some of what they're getting, I think, is counter to what they would really like. But the other thing about that is that the day that Hyatt opens the hotel, they're responsible for the operation of the hotel. They have their own management structure they've got to answer to. They have their own investment. There is no operational subsidy to this hotel, nor is there any mechanism to provide operational subsidy. So Hyatt will be responsible for operating the hotel. That means that they will have to respond to all of the market forces that every other hotel has to respond to without a public subsidy to do that. Number one, and number two, they'll be doing that with a union scale wage benefits package that makes them probably slightly more expensive than most of the other hotels. So the idea that they would drop their rate in order to be below what the downtown hotels are going to pay really wouldn't make any sense in a market economy. They will behave just as every other hotel does in this market.
The third question I wanted to just give you a chance to address has to do with the stress testing that you did.
Mm-hmm.
And it was robust, looking at a 9/11 type event, other changes in the industry. None of us up here, I'll speak for myself, none of us up here are experts in the hospitality industry.
Yep.
And none of us have a crystal ball. But we are reminded daily that the smartest people in America make bad bets on things that they anticipate is going to pay off but don't.
Right.
In the last month, the New York Times sold a newspaper they bought for $1.2 billion for $30 million and without the pension liabilities. The News Corp spent $500 million acquiring MySpace, and the smartest people said that was the future, and they sold it for pennies on the dollar.
Yeah.
And I guess one of the concerns we've had from people is, what if beyond a 9/11 type event, what if there's a systemic change in the travel industry where there's less travel, less conventions, more use of internet and other kinds of tools? And what if that occurs so that long-term it just isn't the same business model? What do you say about that?
Well, I actually got two responses. You and I know both are big fans of libraries. I spend a lot of time out near my home promoting the construction of new libraries. And every time we did that, we had people that say, why are you doing that? Libraries are a thing of the past. Nobody will use libraries in the future because there's all this internet. And the thing that's intriguing is that as internet has gotten more widespread, use of libraries has gone through the roof. The other thing I would say just sort of flippantly to you is I happened to notice I was on Facebook this morning and happened to notice that you and I have 1,097 mutual friends.
I don't have that many friends.
Which I think
I'm honored.
Which I think is a little unusual, but I have 2,937 friends, I think it is. But I still run into you at parties. And so I'm thinking that we don't.
Is that
change.
A good thing or a bad thing?
No, I think that's a good thing.
I know that this job has many burdens. I'm not trying to add to
no,
them.
No, no, no. But what I think I'm trying to say is I don't think that the phenomenon of contact with other human beings is going to change based on technology. We can develop all the meetings, you know, all the meeting software that we want. People still want to get together with other people. They still want to press the flesh. They still want to chat with folks face to face, eyeball to eyeball. And no matter how much technology evolve, I don't think that's going to change. We've seen, the other day in the debate, there was reference made. Well, the architects, for example, who like to do that, and their conventions are down significantly. Well, we've gone through a 5-year period where unemployment amongst architects was 40%. So they're not going to conventions. Big surprise. I thought that the response from the other consultant that there was recently a convention of online gamers that drew 1,000 people to a convention so they could sit in a room and watch each other game online is more. I just don't think there's any evidence for that kind of systemic change in the convention business in particular. And certainly not in the travel industry. I think we're traveling more now as we come out of the recession. I think we're traveling more now than we did going into the recession, quite frankly.
Thank you, Tom. And thanks for the spirit of collaboration with your colleagues on the
well,
other
thank
side
you.
Of the river.
Thanks very much.
Yep.
Councilmember Chase.
Sam Chase, Metro Council, District 5, which represents Northwest, North, and Northeast Portland, where the convention center and would-be hotel are located. And I just want to first thank this council for the staff at the city for the engagement in this process, because I think it's really made it's asked a lot of really tough questions. It's helped make sure that this is a very solid project proposal moving forward. And I want to also provide a reminder that we are talking about the intergovernmental agreement here for authorizing the use of authorizing a loan guarantee for this project. There will still be a project process for Metro to look at a development agreement and what would happen. That would be later, probably in December, when we would work out the details of how a development would actually occur. So, I wanted to share my personal perspective about this project, because I was not a fan of the past proposals for Convention Center Hotel. And I came to council, I started 9 months ago, I came very skeptical about the project. And I was ready to ask a lot of tough questions. And one of the first questions I asked was, can't we use these resources for schools or social services? My background's more in social justice, and I have a strong passion for schools and social justice, and it was important to me to recognize that, as you can see in the intergovernmental agreement, the original language up front, these are resources that are intended for tourism, economic development, and the promotion of the kinds of uses that we are talking about here with the hotel. They are not available for those other kinds of uses. I also asked the question, if it's such a great idea, why can't the market do it? And why doesn't it just happen on its own? And what I come to realize is that the market is building this. There's not public ownership. There's not operating subsidies long term. The market is building and owning this. And what we're doing is we are buying some things with our loan guarantee and some of the resources, other resources that we're putting in. And so we're making a purchase. And to me, it's less of a subsidy and more of a purchase on behalf of the people in our region. And what are those things? Women, minority-owned, emerging small business contracts. Metro's first hiring, which through Metro's first opportunity target area, which means that we would give opportunity first to people in surrounding areas around the convention center for employment opportunities. LEED Silver construction, prevailing wage, a peace labor agreement that would allow long-term, ongoing, good, well-paid jobs in the, whether you take the 300 jobs that were projected from, you know, the opponent, or take the 900, but we are talking about a significant number of long-term ongoing jobs. We're also talking about a significant number of union construction prevailing wage jobs. There are, in addition to that, there is a ballroom that typically wouldn't be built in a project like this. That's an additional expense. And there's the room block agreement, 500 block of rooms, which is a very significant benefit. So those are the direct things that we are purchasing with this project. In addition to me, another important priority is that we are focusing on bringing out of state resources to the table to support this project. And so, you know, as somebody who has been a skeptic turned advocate on this project, I wanted to share that perspective with you, and thank you again for working on this project.
Great. Thank you.
Councillor, I just want to make one point that the city's perspective on this is a little different from Metro's in that the city's 5% actual of total motel tax actually can be used, is used for general fund purposes. So from our perspective, if this project would be built anyway, without a public subsidy, it would generate $1.5 to $2.5 million a year that we can spend on, could have spent on police, fire, parks, and services for homeless people and people at risk of homelessness. So our perspective financially is, I think, a little different from that of the other governments.
Well, I think the long-term benefit here, too, is that this is going to be a property tax-paying property. So we are not exempting the property. So this is going to be a revenue generator, not just in actual dollars going to the city, but in creating those additional incomes and resources.
I was just talking about the hotel motel tax aspect of it specifically.
It'll actually generate property taxes and business license fees, right?
Right.
Yes.
And you go from a piece of property that's assessed at about $10.5 million to $120 million, $200 million hotel plus apartments around it. So that's a pretty significant increase in property tax alone.
Thank you. Mayor Willie, welcome.
Thank you, Mayor. Jerry Willie, Mayor of Hillsborough. I'm going to be very brief in mine. My conversation, because I only have 12 friends on Facebook, so I don't get nearly as much space.
You've
got
so.
Work to do.
I think I'm going to be
get
thankful.
Get out more, Mayor.
They're really important 12 people, though. I'm sure they are. From the standpoint of the suburbs, and I don't often refer to Hillsborough as a suburb, but I will tell you from the perspective of the other cities that are going to benefit from this project, I just want to encourage you to proceed with this. We're very pleased about this. I think, as Tom said, this is a long overdue idea. And what it does is, in the travels that I do, I generally stay a few extra days in wherever city convention I am going to be at. I usually take my wife, and we get to enjoy the amenities of the region. And I think that's what this project is going to do as well. We're very excited about the possibility of inviting visitors into our region and then introducing them to the wineries of Washington and Yamhill counties, of course, and the golf courses and many of the other attributes that we as a county and certainly as a region provide. So from that standpoint, I want to encourage you to move ahead with this rapidly. You know, one of the things that we invested in, and I understand the investment of general fund dollars in this past year, was the Hillsborough Hops, the baseball team, the single-A baseball team. Ours was $15 million, a little smaller debt obligation there, but the impact of it has been really outstanding. And we invite for 38 home games, we invite and encourage people from Vancouver and Salem and all over the region to come experience single-A baseball in a very home-like feeling in a baseball park. I think the same thing will occur when you begin to invest in this region. We need Portland. We need Multnomah County. We need Clackamas County to be successful, as well as Washington County. And so I think this project will certainly do that. So I applaud not only the City of Portland, but Multnomah County and Metro to move ahead on this project. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Frederick, welcome.
Thank you. Well, thank you, Mayor Hales and Commissioners. Good to see you. I'm Representative Lou Frederick, representing House District 43 in North and Northeast Portland. And the project you're discussing this afternoon is planned for my district. I'm here to tell you how much, frankly, I welcome this project. Like Metro Councilor Sam Chase, I have been a skeptic over at various points of this discussion over the last 20 years. This is something you can't just talk about in generalities. The particulars of what is going to be built and how it will be operated matter a lot. In this case, an agreement already settled tells us that the project will bring not just jobs, but good jobs. We often hear claims made about the right to work. The right to work is always with us, always has been. Believe me, coming from the family and the ethnic background that I do, I'm well aware that it isn't the right to work that's in at question. It's the right to be paid a decent and sustaining wage for that work. That requires advocacy. That always needs defense. The right to safe and dignified working conditions, the right to representation when issues arise. And that's why I support this project so wholeheartedly. And I was happy to vote and advocate for dedicating over $10 million in lottery bonds for the purpose of acquiring, developing, constructing, and equipping the Oregon Convention Center Hotel Project. These will be union construction jobs and union hotel operation jobs. Jobs that represent both parts of the expression, an honest day's work for an honest day's pay. Now, my district needs economic activity. The prospect that this project will bring people into my district to spend money, hopefully lots and lots of money, and that some of that money will go to my constituents so that they can spend it with other local businesses, that coincides perfectly with my goals. It's the kind of thing that I'm always looking for to lift up the community. This has been a long time coming, and I'm really so glad that to get it started. I want to just thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for any of our...
Lou, I'd be remiss, since you're here, to not ask you, given the history in your district of urban renewal to the north and the displacement of historic communities, right, and the ongoing grievance about the lack of opportunity for historical populations in that area, as you review the MWESB goals and the approach to bringing people from the community into positions and then the hiring, are you satisfied that we've set the bar high enough?
I am very pleased that we're working on this in the way that we have. We have begun the process of recognizing that we have businesses that have been trying to climb a ladder that in many cases the rungs have been pulled out before they even got to them. That's not the case with this project. I'm very pleased to see what's going on with it. And I want to thank the Metro Council for making sure that this is a part of that. But I am very pleased. I'm pleased to see that we're going to see small businesses and businesses within my community, minority and non-minority businesses, but businesses within the community able to start the process of having the capacity to build even more projects and be part of even more efforts, not only in the city but in the region. Thank you.
Other questions? Thank you all very much. I think we have just a couple more invited folks to speak, and then we'll start the public testimony. If Randall Ely is here representing Mayor Doyle in Beaverton, and Michael Smith from Travel Portland, are they here? Yes, at least one of them is. Welcome. We can, yeah, if you want to ask questions. Okay. All right. Good afternoon.
Hi. I'm afraid to start without...
Yes, please.
That's great. Mayor Hales, Commissioners, my name is Mike Smith. I am Vice President of Convention Sales with Travel Portland, 1000 Southwest Broadway. And I would just like to say for the record, I am so thankful that I am not the one that was asked to explain the Pac-Man chart. But my sales team and I, totaling 10, are where the rubber meets the road in terms of why a convention center hotel is needed. We're the ones that compete every day with major West Coast cities for convention business. From Seattle to San Diego to Long Beach to Phoenix to Denver, our convention planners are looking at all those cities. And at the end of the day, it is to us that the convention planners say yes or no, we'll come to your city. Our key responsibility is to put convention business into the Oregon Convention Center, and we typically run about 40 groups through that building every year. If I can brag just a little bit, last year that number was 46 groups, and that represented $11 million to the building, which is the best year ever for convention business, and almost $60 million to the community. And last year we also booked 52 new convention center groups for all future years, with an estimated economic impact of $12 million for the convention center and about $70 million for the community. Now, those are excellent numbers, and they line up very well with the recent national data that shows that the hospitality industry has come back and come back very strong, and it's growing. Now, a lot of planners said yes to us last year. Unfortunately, a lot of planners said no as well. Every year, we lose roughly in the range of 30 to 35 convention groups because of concerns with Portland's hotel package. To convention planners, our hotel package is just inordinately complex. It's a logistical nightmare for them, and it puts them at financial risk. They don't like it. I can't tell you the times that I've been told, we like you, you're a great guy, we like your city, but we will not book Portland with your current hotel package. So the construction of a convention center hotel is about job creation and economic development, and frankly, to help my team stop losing opportunities. This hotel will help create additional group demand for the city. Conservatively, 5 to 10 new convention groups, sweet spot of 2,000 to 2,500 peak room nights each, through our efforts, but also new additional business that will be brought to Portland by Hyatt's team of national salespeople. With the hotel and with the TID and VDF funding, we will have the tools to be very, very successful. Everybody knows that standing still is not a successful way for any business to operate. And right now, Portland finds itself at a crossroad. If we elect to stand pat with our current convention product, our convention business will decline, because I guarantee you that our competitors are not standing still. They're growing. They're getting better. If we do nothing, our convention business will decline. We'll get fewer groups. We'll get smaller groups. Our revenue will decline. We know that over time, there are going to be new conventions, or new hotels, rather, in Portland. In fact, we've got two new ones coming into the Pearl District. But simply having new hotels come onto the horizon does not generate new business for the city. In fact, any hotel that opens, if it does not create new additional business for the community, all it will do is cannibalize the current business that's in the community, and everybody will get a smaller slice of business. The Convention Center Hotel, we need it because it creates a new demand, new business for the city of Portland. I cannot urge you strongly enough to support building this hotel. My team and I would like to win. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for Michael? Thanks very much. Okay, I know Carla has a sign-up sheet. I think there are a few names on it. Let's start.
We have a total of 37 people left to speak. The first four, please come on up, are Carol Wentz, David Welch, David Pendleton, and Kimo Bertram.
Because there's so many people signed up, I want to urge you to be focused and brief and to the point. And if someone else has made the point that you plan to make, then you know, feel free to indicate that rather than repeating something that somebody else has said. So common sense hopefully will keep us all focused and get the points on the table and not have everyone here wait a long time. So please, with that in mind.
Hi, I'm Carolyn Wentz. I live at 1460 Southwest 192nd Avenue in Aloha, Oregon, 97006. I own a company called Plans and Action. It's a destination management company. If you don't know what that is, it means that I do everything to help a convention group, local businesses, from setting up conferences, seminars, special events. I do meet and greet at the airports, tours, and all of that. Basically, I do just about anything as long as it's legal. part of my job is that I am a small business, and I work with local groups as well as the convention groups that come in. My connection is between the meeting planners and the local businesses. For instance, I might do a group like last year. I had the Daughters of the Nile, 1,600 women coming into Portland. So between just their transportation costs, doing tours and different things, my transportation bill was $189,000. For a small business, that's